You listen to this podcast every day because it's your KC local reliable news source. You take us seriously. But you know, we like to get down and we want you to party with us. Join us at our annual benefit Radioactive on June 14th. NPR's All Things Considered host Ari Shapiro is the featured guest at this party, and it's gonna be bumping. You gotta be there. Sponsorship packages and ticket information are available at kcur.org/radioactive.
UpToDate wants to know what you're talking about with family and friends. You can text UTD to 816-601-4777 to tell us. Again, 816-601-4777. This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. Reporters in both Missouri and Kansas these days are pushing against a new wave of hostility aimed at slowing down their work and their ability to inform the public how officials are spending their tax dollars. In Kansas, Emporia State University is demanding payments of hundreds of dollars to produce public records. In Missouri, reporters are facing ticky-tack restrictions on where they can park and their ability to easily move through security. The state has now also compromised their ability to get into the Capitol in the evening when much business is conducted. The result is it slows down their ability to do their jobs. Now a closer look at what's going on in both states. Joining us first is a reporter whose work I've long admired. That's Phil Brooks, a Missouri State House reporter since 1970. That makes him the dean of the Capitol Press Corps. He works for KMOX Radio in St. Louis. Phil, nice to have you back on the show again. Welcome.
Well, that's good to talk with you, Steve. I've missed you.
Been too long, Phil. Well, you've been covering the Missouri State House since 1970, as I mentioned, and you argue that the restrictions this gubernatorial administration has put in place against journalists is unprecedented during your time in Jefferson City. How so?
Well, in all of those decades I've covered the place, I've always found governors really supportive of trying to help reporters provide access into the Capitol. But this governor, shortly after he took office in 2018, it's been a pattern of hostility. He flatly refused to answer questions from Missouri Independent Reporter, attacking the organization's nonprofit contributors. Then it got more serious when, you'll remember, he sought a criminal investigation of a Post-Dispatch reporter. Right. For right. Simply reporting a major security breach on the Education Department's website. Then State House parking spaces around the Capitol were removed from designated news organizations. And then this latest with the building pass revocation has been a nightmare for all of us covering the Capitol.
We'll talk more about these things individually as we move ahead here. So what prompted you to write this latest piece, Phil? What was the final straw for you?
Well, it was the building pass that effectively prohibits me or any reporter simply leaving the Capitol to have dinner with a spouse, with family, and then get back to the office in the Capitol to work. You can't do that now. It's almost, well, so much for respect for family life.
And this is happening because why? Explain what prohibits you from getting back into the building in the evenings.
It is that we used to have a building pass that allowed 24-hour access into the Capitol building. We had to be cleared to get the building pass, and he just revoked it. We now have to go through metal detectors, Capitol security. But after about 5:30, there is no Capitol security. It's a major barrier. But Steve, what got me most concerned is it's created a hostile environment in the Capitol. Hmm. And as somebody who has taught generations of journalism students covering the state Capitol, I'm concerned the degree to which this will intimidate them, make them less interested in covering the important issues in a state capital or federal capital. This is a discouragement. It's a frustration. And I fear how it's going to affect future generations of reporters we all rely on to know what their public officials are doing.
And for a reporter to get locked out in the evening hours, that can be a pretty big deal for a reporter. How so, Phil?
You'll remember that there are late evening committee sessions. The Senate filibusters can go on into the early morning hours. And if you can't get back in to do your work, that severely limits your ability to cover some of the biggest news that happens out of the Capitol, particularly with the Senate late evening sessions. You can get into the Capitol, but you'll be escorted by a Capitol security officer to go into your office and get any equipment you want, files, and then escorted out of the building.
Wow. You know, you talk about the importance of being able to get into the building in your latest column. Remind us about your experience on that fateful night back in 2000. I'm talking about the evening that Governor Mel Carnahan died in that plane crash, Phil.
Oh, yeah. KMOX had gotten a tip that somebody thought the governor was involved in a plane crash, and I think it was Jefferson County. Well, an awful lot of news in the late evening happens in the Capitol garage. It's the basement level garage where top right. state legislators and state officials park. I immediately went there knowing that would be a go-to place if something serious had happened to the governor. Sure enough, Becky Cook, Secretary of State, a member of the Governor Disability Board, showed up with tears in her eyes, nodded her head to me, and confirmation of what she knew I was thinking. But the confirming time was when the Lieutenant Governor Roger Wilson was driven into the Capitol garage by a Highway Patrol security guy and parked in the spot that was used only by the governor of the state of Missouri. Roger nodded his head in confirmation, and I knew then the governor definitely was deceased. And reported it on KMOX.
Let's turn to a different issue that you're facing that you've mentioned here. It's the cutting of State House parking spaces for reporters. What happened there, Phil, and why is that of concern to journalists?
Well, it's a concern to journalists because the governor, we used to have parking spaces that were designated for specific news outlets.
Right.
Mine was KMOX. But under the governor's policy, they're now just news media with no ability to enforce it, no definition of what do you mean by news media. So the parking spaces are being grabbed, making it impossible if you come in the middle of the day to find a parking spot to have a place to park. It's required me to have my wife, who has suffered the burden of a 50-year reporter, at times having to chauffeur me to the Capitol building. It's just another one of these frustrations of governor who's increasingly shown his hostility to the news media.
Yeah. Are there other ways, perhaps, that you didn't mention in your Missouri Independent piece, Phil, that you've seen Missouri state government, you know, grow more hostile toward reporters in recent years?
It's largely partisan. You'll remember, there's always some degree of friction when we ask tough questions of some folks. Some of my best sources actually encouraged and enjoyed having to deal with the tough questions, knowing that that's what the general public probably would be asking anyway. So it gives them an opportunity to provide an explanation for their actions. I don't know if you remember, but Mike Parson, when he was in the Missouri Senate, was a tremendously collaborative, cooperative legislator with reporters. But something's happened since he became governor. He's gotten pretty hostile with us.
Well, what do you think has happened, Phil, as someone who has watched this so closely for so many years? What's your theory?
Well, I have been told that he was angered by the stories we were doing about his inaction when he first became governor, inaction with the COVID-19 pandemic. I've since been told by folks who know him that he actually had a history of being hostile to staffers, to folks who questioned his decisions. who spoke up offering alternative ideas. Frankly, I didn't see that any. But when he became governor, it's like his personality changed.
And just for the record, we reached out to the governor's office asking for a response and didn't receive one. Phil, do you think this is, you know, just as part of a larger trend in government these days where politicians have grown, you know, increasingly hostile towards reporters and are much less likely to cooperate with them? Or is this more specific to this gubernatorial administration in your view?
I think it's, Steve, I think it's more specific to Mike Parson. I had, over the decades, there were a few folks in state government and the legislature, a few lobbyists who did not appreciate tough-worded questions, didn't appreciate some of the stories I was doing, but they were few and far between. I realized the governmental process effectively is an adversarial environment.
Sure.
You don't survive if you're intimidated or get angry by tough questioning. That's how the process works.
Has the press corps made any decisions about how to fight back against these restrictions, Phil? Does it have any options going forward?
None that we can find. David Labe, AP's correspondent, has been the leader of the Capital News Association to try to negotiate something with the governor's office, with the office of administration. He's made no headway at all. We suggested to the Senate President Pro Tem, Caleb Rowden, that since we all have offices assigned by the Senate to the news media, they could authorize building passes for us, but so far, no action out of the Senate. And I suspect there's a reluctance, particularly during a legislative session, for the Senate to take on the governor.
Well, that's Phil Brooks, a Missouri State House reporter since 1970. He's dean of the Capitol Press Corps. He works for KMOX Radio in St. Louis. We're talking about a recent opinion piece he did for the Missouri Independent. Phil, good to have you on the show, and good luck in the months ahead this session.
It's good to be with you, Steve.
We'll be back in just a minute.
Hey there, KCUR podcast listener. We at KCUR have a question for you. How do you describe us? Yes, us, like KCUR. What words come to mind? We can hear you thinking. Go to kcur.org/describe and actually tell us how you answer that question. That's kcur.org/describe. And thanks.
If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to KCUR Up to Date here. We're talking this morning about hurdles that reporters are facing in both of our state houses. We just visited with Phil Brooks on the Missouri, about the Missouri situation. Now, let's turn to Clay Wirestone. He's the opinion editor for the Kansas Reflector. He'll talk to us about the resistance that Emporia State University is showing when it comes to fulfilling open records requests. Clay, it's nice to have you on the show. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Steve. Thanks for having me.
So Emporia State University was in the news just a few months back when it effectively suspended tenure and fired dozens of professors. The Kansas Reflector then filed a request for public records. What were you hoping to learn? What were you hoping to find out?
Well, sure, Steve. So basically, we had a really simple request. To be absolutely clear here. I'm the opinion editor. I'm not on the news side.
Right.
You know, we have editor-in-chief Sherman Smith, senior reporter Tim Carpenter. You know, they're the folks who are driving the actual reporting. I'm watching and getting outraged on their behalf. So the question was essentially, if you fire more than 30 faculty, as they did last semester, are they actually giving performance bonuses to any faculty this semester? We were just curious because obviously if you're saying we're facing new financial realities, as their president Ken Hush has said, and we need to fix structural deficits, then you would assume that the university was in a very, you know, penny-pinching kind of mode. So we were just curious to see, are they handing out these bonuses? And if so, to who and for how much?
Yeah. Well, then the university proceeded to break the law by not replying to the records request in time. Tell us about that.
Well, yeah, sure. The Kansas open records law is actually pretty clear on this point, that after a request is submitted, you have 3 days to either produce the record or to say how long it's going to take you to produce the record. And to be fair here, Steve, a lot of public organizations break this in Kansas. Right. They routinely misinterpret that to mean just respond at all, when that is actually not what the text of the law says. In Emporia State's case, it took 2 extra days for them to respond to us at all, and then another couple of days before they then gave us the estimate of what it would cost to produce the records.
And then last week, you put out this opinion piece on the issue, saying that Emporia State is now demanding $700 from the Reflector for this information. Have you ever seen anything quite like this?
Well, so in Kansas, it's unfortunately something that we have seen before. I talked to Max Couch, who's an attorney here in the state and the president of the Kansas Coalition for Open Government. It has the Press Association and some other folks as members. And he said that, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, the town of Frontenac, I believe a radio reporter was asking for some records, and they asked for $3,000 to produce those. And at that point, they actually appealed that to Attorney General Derek Schmidt, then Attorney General Derek Schmidt. And he said that that was pro se, unreasonable, and demanded that the, you know, city staff had to take, you know, open records counseling education, something along those lines.
And what happened? What's happening in this case then with the $700?
Well, so in this case, I mean, just to be really clear here, this is to ask who got bonuses out of perhaps 300 faculty. Like, right. This is not a Fortune 500 company with tens of thousands of employees, right? And also, you know, it's a policy decision to decide who gets performance bonuses. So one assumes that there's just a spreadsheet somewhere where they say, oh, these are the people we're giving these bonuses to. And obviously the university objects to that. But yeah, they want $700. They claim it will take 20 hours to do this work, with someone being paid $35 an hour to do so. Hmm. In this case, Steve, we're actually probably just going to pay it today. I mean, it's a ransom, but at least it's not $3,000. And, you know, we can swing it at this point. But unfortunately, you know, there's probably many other news organizations or individuals who couldn't.
You know, Clay, you spoke with a First Amendment attorney for the purposes of your article to learn a little more about how Kansas differs from other states when it comes to fulfilling public records requests. What did you learn from that attorney? What did he have to say about all this?
Yeah, so Kansas is actually apparently fairly unusual in that not only do we allow public institutions to set, you know, that staff time rate. So for Emporia State, it was $35 an hour, but there's no cap on it in Kansas. So they can pick whatever they like for that hourly rate and say it's going to take however long. Other states will cap how much can be charged per hour, or actually, I believe some, like California, don't allow an hourly charge at all.
Hmm. Is anyone making an attempt to change that in the Sunflower State?
Yeah. So again, Max told me that at least over the last 10 years, there have been at least 4 different attempts to change the law, most recently just a couple of years ago. And that was an attempt to put a cap on those hourly charges, and it didn't get out of committee.
You know, not everyone listening to this interview is a journalist and might not understand the gravity of this, Clay. So why is it so important for records like the ones Emporia State University now has to be easily accessible to the public and to the news media?
Sure. Well, I think the most important thing to understand here, this is your money. As taxpayers in the state, for the federal government, we pay the salaries of public officials. We pay the costs of public institutions. And so as a result, we have a right to know how are they using our money? What are they spending it on? Who are they spending it on? And for how much? And actually, a lot of that information these days with the internet is more available, more accessible than ever. You can actually go online and find salary information for a lot of public officials. But the most important thing, I think, is if you pay for it, you deserve to know where it goes to. It's the same as going to a grocery store. It's the same as going to your local convenience store. You put down the money, you get something back. I mean, you don't just give them the money for the fun of giving them the money. You expect that there's going to be some sort of return. And in the state of our public, state of our public institutions, we pay the money, and then we deserve to know how that's actually spent. We deserve to know what we're getting for it.
You know, there was that series of stories that the Star did a few years ago, Clay, that talked about the lack of transparency in Kansas state government, which surprised a lot of people who read that series. Have you noticed that trend continuing? Has there been a response to that series to open up state government, or is it sort of the same old, same old?
It's actually the worst. It's neither of those. It's gotten considerably worse.
Wow.
Our editor, Sherman, wrote a piece about this last year. I've continued to write columns about it this year. The Kansas State House is getting less and less transparent. And I see the same mindset at the State House that I think we saw at Emporia State. It's not so much that they're saying you will never get this information or you'll never find it out, but it's more that we don't care how hard it is for you to do this. We don't care how many obstacles we're going to put up in your way. And if you have to surmount them, you know, so be it. But yes, it's gotten very, very challenging in the state house.
What can be done to change that? Because getting the public excised about the fact that journalists can't get the records they need, that's a pretty tough sell. So what needs to happen to change the thinking in the state house?
Well, Steve, I think part of what we need to do is actually what we're doing right here on this program with right. your previous guest and myself. I think a lot of times when journalists talk about open records, a lot of times when journalists talk about access to, you know, a state house or transparency, they talk about that in just the terms of, oh, I was trying to get to a meeting and it was difficult to get to the meeting, or I was trying to do this and it was tough because of this. It's just in the terms of individual stories. It's in terms of the process. I feel like journalists, and especially those folks like myself who are opinion journalists, we have a responsibility to step back and paint a bigger picture and say, hey, these folks are not, this is not just affecting journalists. This is affecting everyday people who want to keep track of their government. We have to really speak out about it and be very public and vocal. And, you know, sometimes journalists, you know, we're reluctant to make ourselves the story. We're reluctant to talk too much about our own travails because obviously we have a job that's exciting and interesting in many ways. But I think we have to talk about it really openly and frankly.
You know, I'm really interested in what you just had to say about the fact that you think the level of transparency, it's actually getting more difficult in Topeka than it is right now. Maybe we need on this program to go back and talk about that some more, because that's really troubling to me, given especially that stellar series that the Star did, Judy Thomas, Laura Bauer, and others. That was a tremendous series, and yet you're saying it's gotten worse.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. And just to give you one example, just a week or so ago, there was a hearing held in the House on a Senate bill. It was called Senate Bill 83. There was a hearing to be held on this bill. People showed up to testify. And Representative Christy Williams, who was overseeing the committee, she said, well, you can testify to whatever you want, but this is not going to be the bill after the weekend. We're going to gut this bill. It's something entirely different is going to go into it. So people were actually showing up to testify about text that they had no idea of what was going to be in the final bill. And they wouldn't even say what text was going to be in the final bill. So it's becoming kind of an Alice in Wonderland situation over there.
Wow. Well, that's Clay Wirestone. He's the opinion editor for the Kansas Reflector. It's a great source of information about the Kansas State House. Clay, thanks for your insights. Thanks for sharing your views. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Steve. I appreciate it.
You bet. Up to Date is produced by Zach Wilson, Reginald David, Elizabeth Ruiz, Zach Perez, and Hannah Cole. Our intern is Claudia Brancard. Our announcer and engineer is Paul Nakatura. Our theme music is composed and performed by the great Bobby Watson. I'm Steve Kraske. Thanks for listening.
You seem like a person who likes to know what's going on in the world. But do you know what's going on in Kansas City? Start your morning with Kansas City Today. This daily news podcast tells you what's going on at home in 15 minutes or less. Listen to Kansas City Today from KCUR, part of the NPR network.